Faustin Linyekula was born and brought up in Zaire, now Democratic Republic of Congo. In the early 2000s, he created Studios Kabako in Kisangani in the northeast of the DRC. He's been described as possibly the most important artist working on the African continent. In his dance, choreography, his visual theatre, he addresses decades of war and terror, fear, economic collapse and persecution. He has performed and taught internationally. Faustin Linyekula is coming to New Zealand for the New Zealand Festival of the Arts in February to perform In Search of Dinosaur.
I would rather say that this is like my notebook upon returning to the city where I grew up after having been away for 13 years.
Returning to Kisangani.
Exactly. So it is about returning to Kisangani in 2006 after I'd left in 1993. And so when I go back to the city where I grew up, where I can say as a young man, I dreamt, and it's because I dreamt in that city in the mid-80s until the early 90s that I was able to do the journey that I did over all these years. So when I go back after 13 years, knowing that this is one of the cities that had suffered most during the war in my country, I was going back with this apprehension that the city I grew up in no longer existed. And especially knowing also that some of my friends had left, some had passed. So it was going back to a city that no longer existed to kind of bury that city, but to give myself the opportunity to start a new relationship to this pile of ruins.
Let's talk about the politics for a moment. When you left, Mobutu was in power, was he not?
And the country was known as Republic of Zaire.
And what specifically prompted you to leave?
At first, it was really like just trying to find a way to go to university, because I must say that while growing up in Zaire in the 80s, I never dreamt of being an artist, simply because in Kisangani, which was the third largest city in the country, there weren't any examples around me of people who are making a career in the arts, you know, performing arts. So I could not, as a child or as a teenager growing up there, dream of that as a possible career path. So I went to high school thinking of studying law and conservation biology afterwards. But in 1991, when I finished high school, it was the beginning of the political troubles that would lead to the war in 1996-97. And so to just replace everything in context, Mobutu was in power for 32 years. And between 1965 and 1990, he was really comfortable in power, and he wouldn't move, thanks to the Cold War. But after the collapse of the Soviet bloc and in 1989-1990, his godfathers in the West no longer needed him, you know, because he could no longer play a strategic role in the heart of Africa as a shield against communism. So they did put pressure on him to democratize the regime. And this created an avenue for the people within the country to start protesting against the system that had been in place. And one of the sources of pressure for him was university campuses. And so in 1991, he just decided to shut down all universities and to spare himself that pressure. So after staying at home with friends for 2 years, I was like, well, maybe I should go and see if I can go to university in one of the countries in the region. And with the money I had, the safest country I could get to was Kenya. So I traveled by road to Kenya in 1993.
One of the people that you pay tribute to or who forms part of the story that you tell in Search of Dinosaur is a writer called Antoine Vumilia-Muhindo.
Yes.
And he was, in fact, imprisoned for his role in ousting Mobutu, was he not?
So this is a childhood friend. We started writing poetry as teenagers together in the city of Kisangani, and we were the youngest members of the Union of Zairean Writers, the Kisangani section then. And in 1996, at the very beginning of the rebel movement that would lead to the collapse of Mobutu's regime, Vumilia joined the rebel forces because he happened to be in eastern Zaire then, and I was already in Kenya. And when they seized power in Kinshasa in May of 1997, he was appointed in the office of the president, President Laurent Désiré Kabila. And so in January 2001, when President Kabila was assassinated by one of his own bodyguards, he was amongst the people who were arrested as potential conspirators. And so he spent 10 years in prison until he escaped in the summer of 2010.
He and you are saying that he was innocent of the assassination attempt on Kabila.
Yes.
Right. And how did he escape? No. Sorry, I'm getting off the track here, but how did he escape?
He escaped dressed as a woman. So he walked through the main door of the main prison in Kinshasa dressed as a woman. And then after being in hiding for several weeks in Kinshasa, some fishermen took him across to Brazzaville. And from Brazzaville, he was under the UNHCR protection. And later on, the Swedish government granted him political asylum. So now he lives in Stockholm or near Stockholm.
Another person that you pay tribute to, in fact, your studio, Studios Kabako, is named after your friend Richard Kabako. Who was he?
Richard is the first person whom I met and who said, I want to be a professional artist. And in Kisangani, this was like just unheard of. And he was determined to become an artist. And he is amongst the people who trained me in theater when I joined the theater workshops in Kisangani in 1989. So in 1994, I'd been in Kenya already for a year, and he decided to come and join me there. And he died on his way to Kenya near the border with Uganda. So it was a way of remembering the first person that I ever met and who was clear that he wanted to be an artist. And so it's a friend, a brother, and a dreamer, a beautiful artist, and one of the strongest inspirations that I ever met.
He was coming to join you in Kenya.
In Kenya when he died.
Oh, what did he die of?
He died of plague, and it's one of the stories we tell in the piece. I didn't know until 1994 that such a disease still existed. I thought it only existed in books. But after his death, I realized that it's still part of the reality of certain communities in the world, like in that part of the northeastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo, in part of Madagascar, bubonic plague still exists. And he was traveling by road. The roads were in terrible conditions, and there was a plague epidemic in that part of the country. And he spent enough time there to contract it, and he fell ill, and he died in this village, 26 kilometers from the Ugandan border.
How did you hear about that?
Through some other people who are traveling there and who are going to Kenya. And, okay, I don't think coincidence exists, really, because I met these people in Nairobi. And I was with another friend, and we were talking about Kabako, who was to come and join us. And he was, it was like, yeah, he must have left 2 weeks ago. How come? Haven't heard. Mind you, in 94, we didn't have cell phones yet. So there were no ways we could get news. And these guys were like, oh, is the person you're talking about, was he traveling from Kisangani, and was he a student there, and was he in theater? It's like, yeah, when we got to this village called Gonyeri, we found that there was this guy who had come from Kisangani and was traveling to Kenya to go and, reconnect with his friend. And he was in theater. He was, he had been a student at the University of Kisangani, and he had died there. And he was buried the day we were leaving Gonyeri.
And that's how you heard.
Yeah, and then a few weeks later, I traveled to Gonyeri, and it was confirmed that it was him.
And there he remains today.
Exactly.
What made you return to what had become the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2001?
Must say that beyond questions of form, whether you call my work dance or theater, I like saying that what really motivates me is telling stories, or at least attempting to tell stories. And in 2001, I understood that the kind of stories that I was more drawn to were not my experience of exile. Because I must say that I find that I only know how to talk about things that are intimately connected to me. And the experience of exile was not what was like pushing me forward and inspiring me to tell stories. So it was like, well, if I have to be true to what is really motivating, I need to go back home. And going back to the Congo, to a place where no one was doing dance or theater in the way I'd grown to do it after my experience in Kenya and Europe, I just had to start this platform that we'd call Studio Kabaku, because it became a place where I'd offer training and where a vehicle through which I would produce my own work. But it had to be a platform to support other artists' work as well, because the only way to survive in such a hostile place is not to be alone. And so Studio Kabaku became a place where I would give myself a chance to meet others and to grow with others.
When you arrived back in 2001, had Kabila been assassinated at that point?
Yes, he had been assassinated 6 months before, because he was assassinated in January of 2001. And so his son, Joseph Kabila, had just been appointed by the other generals as a way of protecting or keeping the power within the Kabila clan. And the country was at war, divided into three major blocks, two rebel movements controlling two parts of the territory, and the government controlling like 40% of the territory. So this was a situation with my family in the eastern part under rebel control. I couldn't go there because it was not safe. So I went to Kinshasa. And so when a country is at war and broken into pieces with lots of foreign troops in the country, because the rebels were backed by Rwanda, Burundi, and Uganda, and the government troops had support from Chad, Zimbabwe, and Angola. So you can't even talk of a political space. You are in a quasi state of emergency. So it's all about trying to control as much of the land for every warring faction. It's about trying to control as much of the land as possible. But it was important for me to be there and to start something within that context. And also as a way of trying to prove to myself and to or to try and see if it's still possible to dream in that country, or if things are just so hopeless that we all have to leave.
I'm talking to dancer, choreographer, Faustin Lenyekula from the Democratic Republic of Congo. You said something very interesting about dictatorship. You said dictatorship robs people of a sense of responsibility for their own lives. And that gives one an idea of the long-term damage a dictatorship can cause to a country.
And in the case of my country, it goes, you can connect that to also the colonial rule. And the Belgian colonial rule in the Congo has been that of extreme violence against the land and the bodies, and extreme sense of robbing the people of any sense of responsibility, even for their own lives. And then come these dictatorship regimes, which continue exactly with the same path. So today we are in a situation where if, for instance, something is not happening, no one would think, not even the government, would take responsibility for it. It would be that, oh, maybe it's the UN fault. Maybe it is the Americans' fault, but it's never our own fault. And it's like this situation where we are permanently, like infants who are not responsible for their own lives.
It's almost a state of learned helplessness.
Exactly. And that's the biggest tragedy of our people, our biggest tragedy.
So what are you doing to work with that or work against it?
I don't know if I have the energy to work against. I prefer putting my energy for something that I believe in. And I deeply believe that the only way to rebuild something in that context is to replace the individual at the heart of the project. Because again, because dictatorships are about negating the possibility of individuals to exist, and the only individual is the dictator himself. So everyone else is just part of like the herd. They have to follow like sheep. So if you start a project where it's about asking people, what's your name? And what is fascinating to me about names is that every name opens a web of relationships. Relationship to people, to history, to place. And so if you're really serious about the name and looking deep into it, you begin to understand where you stand in the world, but above all, to see the space between others and yourself and how to negotiate that space. And it's only then that you can be able to take responsibility for your own position. So I think this is the work we do as artists, and this is the work also Studio Kabako as a platform is, in a modest way, doing in the city of Kisangani, where it's about bringing people together, and by being together over a long period of time, because it's a long process, it can't happen overnight, it takes ages. Slowly, there is like a small group of people that are beginning to look at themselves differently because they've been with Studio Kabako for some time. And because they start looking at themselves differently, they start taking responsibility for their presence within their community. They start even seeing that it is possible to still be in Congo. This is our modest contribution. And I think it can only be from one individual at a time that through one individual at a time that a possible revolution can happen.
Wow. I mean, I would have thought talking about revolution in the DRC was kind of a dangerous thing to do. You may not want to talk about it, but what's the political situation there now?
There were elections last year in December. And people massively mobilized and voted for change. But the results that were announced definitely were not faithful to that mobilization. So there is like risk of being discouraged and desperate again. And rightly so, because somehow President Kabila officially stepped down, but he's still the master of the game in the country. But I would say more and more there are civil society movements, youth movements that are not politically affiliated with the opposition or whatever, but who are just at a point where it's like, we cannot accept this forever. And they're beginning to make small steps, knowing that it will take time. And I feel connected with my own tools, the tools of imagination as an artist, but also as a citizen who's working with communities to imagine things, solutions to our problems. Because one of the projects we're working on at Studio Kalako is like just how to get clean drinking water to people.
I was going to say, it's not only art, it's not only dance and theatre you're involved with. You've set up this water treatment facility.
So I would say it is a it ultimately it is about creating spaces of imagination within our lives. And sometimes it is how to imagine a solution to water problems. And so for me, this becomes a creative gesture that does not result in an artistic object per se, but still, it's about creativity.
And is that facility working?
Yes, the pilot facility is working. It's been working for over 1.5 years now.
And what does it do? How does it work? Who does it provide water?
So the whole city of Kisangani is like roughly 1.4, 1.5 million. We don't know exactly because the last census was in 1984. And it's subdivided into six districts. And this project is in the one district, the only district on the south bank of the Congo River that goes across the city. So you have five districts on the north bank and on the south bank, just one district. And the population is roughly 200, 250,000. And so obviously we cannot provide water to 250,000, but we started a pilot project that could provide water to 2,000 people. Drinking water, not for all everything, but clean drinking water to 1,000 people every day. But it's not charity. So we start with different groups of people, women, elders, religious leaders, young people, and we came up with a pricing scheme that people agreed is fair. And so people come to Studio Kabako to get water. And so now we say that we started talking of Studio Kabako as a source where you get water. Literally, you get water for your body, but you also get water for your soul with the arts.
Who, the title of In Search of Dinosaur, who's Dinosaur?
So in 2006, when I finally could go back to Kisangani. It was after 5 years in Kinshasa. And in Kinshasa, I'd started a new community, a new group of companions there. And the youngest of them was this boy whom, when I'd met him, he was 16. And he came to me and saying he wanted to dance with me. I was like, "You're too young, you should be in school." It's like my grandfather cannot pay. What's your name? My name is Dinosaur. Dinosaur. The way he writes it is like a misspelling of dinosaur in French, And it's like, yeah, but why do you call yourself a dinosaur? It's like I'm the last of my kind. I'm like, well, a 16-year-old who wants to dance and who introduces himself as Dinosaur because he believes he's the last of his kind. I have to do something with this boy. So when I was going back to Kisangani in 2006, knowing that it would be to bury something, so it's a requiem of sort, I was like, I don't want to stop at just singing a requiem. I want to be, new beginning energy. So we built the project as a conversation with this young man who represented the future for me. Hence the title. But the original title was simply Dinosaur. But when my friend Vumilia escaped from prison, we decided to revisit this piece with him now on stage. And I couldn't just reconstruct the original piece, so we called it In Search of Dinosaur, because from his prison, he had been already one of the protagonists of the original piece of Dinosaur through a text he had written, and we had managed to smuggle a cassette recorder to him in prison, and he recorded an excerpt of this text. And I was playing that tape in the original piece. So when he escaped, it was like, oh, we have a chance now to have you on stage. So it could not be the original Dinosaur any longer. So it became In Search of Dinosaur.
And what happened to Dinozor, the 16-year-old dancer?
Who today is 32. He had health problems at some point, heavy, a psychiatric case, so he could no longer work. And so he's still very much part of the family, and we hope that he'll be able to be back because he's doing much better today. So we had to get another younger dancer whom Dinosaur had in part trained in the same way I trained them, a boy from Kisangani who is playing Dinosaur part now.
Are you optimistic about the future for your country? Do you think that you can carry on doing what you're doing? Is it a delicate balance between the politics and the civil society that you're trying to nurture?
For sure, it's a delicate balance that we need to find there. But hey, definitely pessimism is a luxury I cannot afford. And so I'm stubbornly optimistic, not because I have objective reasons to be optimistic about my country. In fact, if anything, when you're very objective and analytical about the situation, you can only be pessimistic. But as the Italian philosopher Gramsci puts it, it's about combining the pessimism of the intellect with the optimism of the will. I know people in that country who have that energy to change things at their own small level. That's what gives me hope. And I would like to be part of that. As for censorship, I think that at some point, poetry is always at least a step ahead of censorship. So if the work is not about slogans, but about talking about these difficult issues and yet trying, or at least attempting to make a poetic gesture with it, I hope that because dictatorship and censorship will always be a step behind, we can still juggle with them and survive, even though there is no guarantee that we are 100% safe.
For Stan Linyekula, who's appearing at the New Zealand Festival of the Arts in February.